Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Tuesday, April 16, 2013. Our intro music today from Alphaville. And the song goes, May You Be Forever Young. I'll play that for the victims, those who were killed and wounded at the Boston Marathon on Monday. And it is always tragic to see this kind of an event, the loss of life, and the natural reactions that are produced. And one of the stories that surfaced last night, and I saw it on Facebook posted by my friend Colonel Ann Wright, is that one of the heroes of the bombing at the Boston Marathon is a man who I met in 2005 at a protest in Washington called Camp Democracy. And I can still vividly recall my conversations with Carlos Arredondo. He was there with a cardboard coffin covered in a flag, and the boots of his son who had been killed in combat in Iraq, along with his son's dog tags. And he took his own personal loss and the misery that that created. He traveled across the United States tirelessly. Wherever he was welcomed, he would show up. And he's far different from Cindy Sheehan. And I don't try to compare or equate the two. I simply say that they are different personalities who both responded to the loss of their son in the misguided war in Iraq. Carlos also lost his second son to suicide within the last year or so. I don't have all of the details. And he was there on Boylston Street when the bomb went off. And like so many, instead of running the other way, he went toward the bomb site and was there helping people. He now carries a blood-soaked American flag that he picked up at the scene of carnage. And so I'm very touched. Not only that he did that, but that his story has been picked up. And I'm sure there are many more like it. I spent a couple of hours watching televised coverage on Monday evening. And I give the corporate media that I watched, and I even spent some time on the Fox News channel, I give them credit for not rushing to any judgments or conclusions. Unlike radio host Michael Savage. Yes, he chose that name, Savage. It's not his real name. And he was acting savagely. Right out of the box, I happened to tune in at the start of his program. He simply pronounced that it was caused by an Islamic group. His evidence could not have been more flimsy, that a Saudi national had been tackled by an American and was hospitalized. Now, as I'm speaking to you at about 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 o'clock Pacific here on the day after, what we do know is that we don't know. We're told there is no suspect. There's been an apartment that was searched. They're certainly pursuing every angle they can find. The bombs were crudely constructed IEDs, made with the kind of pressure cooker that your mom has in the kitchen. And it was these pressure cookers were loaded with some sort of an explosive concoction and shrapnel, like ball bearings or BBs or screws or nails. That's what doctors have picked out of the victims. Many people have suffered lost limbs, those who survived. One of the victims, an 8-year-old boy. All of these tug on your heartstrings. But then when you hear a guy like Michael Savage, showing mostly his ignorance, both of the facts of this incident and that he was willing to come to a conclusion. Just shows how our nation has descended into this kind of jingoism, nationalism, that I find very frightening and very foreign. It makes me feel like this is not my country. And President Obama, who appeared in the White House press room briefly on Monday and made a statement that showed his wisdom that we don't know who did this or why, but we'll find out. He felt compelled to return to the press room Tuesday morning to repeatedly call this event an act of terrorism. And terrorism is an overblown term. He's sensitive about it because Republicans who tried to defeat him last fall by using the attacks in Benghazi, Libya last September 11th, and the alleged failure of the administration to label it a terrorist event. As if that label makes much of a difference. And to me, when the term terrorism is invoked at a crime scene, it's an excuse for big brother, big government, police state activities. Because terrorism is this kind of kryptonite that must be stopped at all costs. And ultimately, we may learn that this is an event caused by known terrorist groups. But there are many other possibilities. And as I mentioned yesterday, my own experience doing a live radio show on the day of the Oklahoma City bombing showed me how in this 24-hour news cycle world we live in, that people don't mind becoming Judge Judy or Nancy Grace and just making up their own conclusions, whether they have the evidence or not. And then, unfortunately, we have an ally of Alex Jones, who got to pop the first question at a news conference with the chief of police in Boston, and immediately accused the chief of knowing that this is some sort of a false flag event. And it pains me because I am what they call a truther. I don't believe the official story about 9/11. I've been over that territory with you many times. And if this is fresh to you, go to my website, peterbcollins.com. Just put in 9/11 truth, and you'll see a list of all the shows that I've done about this. We don't know the truth about 9/11. I don't know that it was a false flag event, but that's a logical theory. And so, on the one hand, we have the Alex Jones types who are jumping the gun and prematurely declaring this a false flag event. And then there are some people at various news outlets who are already engaged in a kind of truther preemption. And they take the most extreme comments that have been raised about 9/11 or other events and ridicule people who exercise good judgment, rational thinking, skepticism, and they demonize them and me in that process. And so I hope that we can move forward, let emotions cool, let the cops, the FBI, do their jobs. And I will not rush to judgment either in embracing what the cops say or in rejecting it simply because it came from them. And I hope you'll stick with me and you can handle that kind of approach, because that's what I do here. That's how I roll. And inevitably, when America suffers a loss, and someone like Bill Maher makes any kind of a comment about the enemy, the other, there's a rush to attack. And so I tread carefully into these waters. But yesterday, in Iraq, there was a coordinated series of car bomb attacks that killed 55 people. It was a deadly day in Pakistan. And we don't know yet if any of America's drone strikes accidentally killed civilians or innocent bystanders in the last 24 hours. And comparative misery is a very slippery slope. So I will not try to enumerate that our loss is not as big as their loss and that our loss is more important than their loss. I think those are empty trains of thought. But I will say this, that we have inflicted a lot of violence in a lot of other parts of the world by keeping Guantanamo open with the hunger strike that is being widely ignored and denied in the United States. We don't seem to recognize that our actions have radicalized many people, some of whom may be a part of Al-Qaeda, may think they're a part of Al-Qaeda, may want to be a part of Al-Qaeda, or may have nothing to do with it. And yet, the American media panders to our sense of exceptionalism and makes it seem like we never do anything wrong, no one would ever want to hurt us, this is all just lunacy that must be suppressed. On the receiving end of a Hellfire missile from an American drone. And this is completely coincidental. But today there's wide coverage of the release of a report by a nonpartisan independent review group of the interrogation and detention programs engaged in by Bush and Cheney and covered up by Obama. It flatly concludes that it's indisputable that the United States engaged in the practice of torture, and that the nation's highest officials bore ultimate responsibility for it. That while brutality has occurred in every American war, there had never been the kind of, quote, considered and detailed discussions that occurred after 9/11 directly involving a president and his top advisors on the wisdom, propriety, and legality of inflicting pain and torment on some detainees in our custody. This came from an 11-member group called the Constitution Project, and it's really a weak substitute for a real war crimes tribunal and investigation of what went on. And this is where Obama has covered up the clear crimes of his predecessor. And the Constitution Project even includes Asa Hutchinson, the former Kansas congressman who recently surfaced as a flack for the NRA. And it did break some interesting new information. There's a long-running claim by the CIA that only three Al-Qaeda prisoners were waterboarded. And this group found that one or more Libyan militants were also waterboarded. And it's my belief, based on accounts from the attorneys of prisoners at Guantanamo, that waterboarding was much more widespread than the U.S. has ever acknowledged. So, it's unequivocal. I've known this for a long time, and to me, this is old news. But it's important for us to sit up, stand up, and acknowledge that we put energy out into the world through torture, through the projection of military force. And yes, it does blow back, even if the American corporate media doesn't tell you that. The Venezuelan election is now the source of great controversy. Nicolas Maduro reportedly won with 50.6% of the vote, defeating Enrique Capriles, who had run against Chavez, Hugo Chavez, the late Chavez, last October. And the United States called on a rerun of the election, or at least a recount. But allies of Maduro, Chavistas, who sit on the Elections Commission, have already certified the election. There have been protests, some street fighting, particularly in Caracas. And I'm sorry to see that, because I think that Venezuela deserves a legitimate leader. And maybe if the U.S. stopped trying to topple the leadership in Venezuela, things might improve for all concerned. Our favorite perv used to be one of the guys on the payroll of the United States, Pervez Musharraf, who staged a coup to become prime minister of Pakistan and then was elected, sort of, after that. He's the guy who extracted billions from the United States after 9/11. Of course, never really delivered the role of ally that we thought we were buying. A three-judge panel in Peshawar has disqualified Musharraf from running for a parliamentary seat, and this basically denies him the opportunity to run for president again. He left Pakistan back in 2008 under threat of certain impeachment, and he's been barred from running in multiple districts in elections. And I believe that you have to be a member of parliament in order to run for prime minister. I'm not totally clear on the rules there. But in any event, we won't have Perv Musharraf to kick around anymore. And that's good news, if you ask me. The Commonwealth of Virginia has joined Indiana, Kansas, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Dakota, Alabama, and Mississippi in passing laws that nominally are to protect the health of a woman who might seek an abortion. But they actually are creating phony barriers in an attempt to close abortion clinics and ban abortion without legally doing so. The new rules in Virginia say that if you have an abortion clinic, they have to meet the latest standards for a newly constructed hospital, like 5-foot-wide public hallways, large janitor's closets, at least 4 parking spaces for each surgical room. These are bullshit restrictions that are clearly aimed at denying women access to legal abortions, as called for by the Supreme Court Roe versus Wade ruling. And a federal court has put on hold similar legislation in Mississippi that threatens to close the last remaining abortion clinic in Jackson. This is a very important and disturbing trend. And where are the national Democratic leaders? It's real obvious to me and anybody who takes a look that this is a coordinated assault on a woman's right to make the choice. And Democratic leaders say they're pro-choice and they just want abortion to be rare. Well, they better speak up soon, or the right will be eroded so badly that women in as many as 9 or 10 states may be denied at least reasonable access to abortion services. And my last story today is right here in my backyard in Northern California, where we have the rogue utility Pacific Gas and Electric. And kudos to Jackson Van Derbeken, an enterprising reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who dug out previously confidential company memos and emails and learned that management of the utility slashed spending for inspections and gas pipeline maintenance so deeply in the 3 years before the San Bruno explosion of a gas pipeline that killed, I believe, 8 or 9 people. 8 is the number, and it destroyed 38 homes. And what it shows is that top management repeatedly and inexplicably reduced spending and expressed no concern for the actual safety of PG&E's gas transmission system. We now know they didn't even know where the pipelines are, in many cases. And from 2007 to 2010, PG&E executives slashed more than $50 million from company engineers' spending proposals. In most cases, the authors of the confidential documents about the spending were not identified. And we also know that some of the executives got bonuses for the savings that accrued from not testing and properly monitoring gas pipelines. So there was a greed component here. There was a payoff to executives to increase the level of risk to the public. It's really astounding. And we've got this Public Utilities Commission, and I still don't understand why Governor Brown leaves Michael Peavy in charge of it. He's a former utility executive who ran Southern California Edison. And he personally pocketed control of the investigation into the San Bruno gas explosion. He tried to engineer a mediation from a former senator without consulting the victims or the officials in the town of San Bruno. Senator George Mitchell was going to be brought in to mediate and try to settle the remaining disputes. And that's why I call PG&E a rogue utility. And at some point, this is a beast that must be brought under control. Thanks for listening to my news and comment today. I'd love to hear your comments. Humblehost at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.